Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, July 19th, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals, your gold and silver bullion dealer. We're located here in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, and our website is centralmetalscorp.com. Our phone number is 800-649-6722, and our email address is mail@centralmetalscorp.com. For any listeners that want to send an email, just send it there, and we'll address the question on air. We're going to start off with a couple of quotes, as the usual here. Today, we have gold up a little bit. It's at $1,294.42. It's up $5.78. Silver is at $1,945. It's up about 6 cents. The S&P is down $1.40 at $1,687.97. The Dow is down 33 at $15,515. Crude oil is at 107.14. It's down 67 cents. And we have some interesting developments in the crude oil industry, and we're going to bring in our co-host Jeff Dunphy from Calgary. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bosco, and welcome again to another one of our economic rants, ladies and gentlemen. We have the traders, as they have globally, mucking with us something fierce, and we have the prognosticators telling us that gasoline is going to $4 a gallon. It's already at this place that I am, $1.39 a liter, which in Canadian terms is more expensive than $4 a gallon, but it's going to cost us a lot more in shipping. It's going to cost us a lot more in groceries, merely because the trucking companies just are going to have to pay more for fuel. And the fuel supplies, Bosco, are the highest. The gasoline supplies are the highest they've been in 20 years. There's something inconsistent about this. There's something manipulated about this. It is a bit bizarre. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, supply and demand fundamentals don't seem to affect the markets anymore. I mean, when you have a high supply of any commodity, the prices should be down. Not so the case in crude oil. Jeff, do you have any comments about what's going on with the the spread between the Brent crude and the WTI?
Yes, Bosco. We're going to play it from two perspectives. One, the proper economy, the utopian economy, I guess, Bosco, as you've sort of made reference to. And the other is the trading economy and how it affects that supply of crude oil and the prices, but also how it affects and is manipulated around the price of gold and silver as well. So first off, let's go to the last 3 years, I believe, the West Texas. There's two indices in oil. One's called WTI, which is West Texas Intermediate, which is an oil that trades in the States, and that price is at Cushing, Oklahoma. And the other is Brent oil or Brent crude, which is traded in Europe. And what the traders have been telling us for the past several years has been there is a Middle East freight index in this. So consequently, Brent at one point was $23 higher than West Texas. And one of the things that transpired in all of this is we were saying, well, it's the scare factor. So the traders are trading off of West Texas, off of Brent, and they're trading it up. And so the differential between West Texas was $23 a barrel, which meant, depending on where your shipping was, you could buy West Texas and sell it as Brent if you could find refiners to take all this stuff, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Bosco. If you were selling gold for $1,000 an ounce today, I bet people would be buying it from you. They might be buying it from you and selling it to somebody else at $1,289 an ounce. that kind of discrepancy and that kind of trading stuff is something that is definitely food for thought, and more so is indicative that the marketplaces are becoming more and more and more manipulated. Now let's talk about how it affects you and the bigger traders on how they play this. The traders now themselves rule the markets. That means they have them so manipulated that they can go wherever they need to go in order to facilitate profiteering. And the profiteering motive in all of this is they get together and figure out where they want the price of oil to go, and they say, let's make it go there. So really, it's not so much the refiners, which apparently have been brought into Congress and are being asked why the prices of crude oil are bouncing around. It's the traders. And the traders are so systemically important to what the government thinks that the government's afraid to do anything about exposing them. So they wrap them firmly on the knuckles with a Nerf bat and send them back to their offices to think hard on being fair and honest. And how maniacal this is, Bosco.
Yeah.
And again, so we now have a differential that is non-existent. In fact, West Texas is now the same price as Brent, give or take a buck or two. And we have the price of oil going up when the supply of oil is the highest it's been in a while. You've got U.S. producers producing oil and gas faster than they have in a long time. And you've got the oil and gas business busy as beavers in various parts of the U.S. creating and producing oil.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Bosco.
Well,
strikes me as a little incongruent, doesn't it?
That's the nature of the commodities market. I remember when I was a broker in that industry, we used to read stories that, you know, some of the ships that come from the Middle East, they'd sit in the Gulf of Mexico, you know, with their oil, and they wouldn't dock their ship till the price of oil got to their liking. So they'd sit out there, and if I remember when the hurricanes came into Florida, they'd show pictures of all the oil rigs out there and all the number of oil refiners, or what do they call those that are in the water, the refining
submersible rigs or the
yeah. There's like, I would say that there's at least a couple hundred of them out there.
Yeah.
And they're scattered all over the Gulf, and I mean, these rigs that come in, they just sit out there and they wait for weeks if they have to before they dock their ship and sell their oil, because they don't have to sell it until they actually dock. And then that's where the
manipulation
comes into play.
You've also got shippers, and you've also got the traders now are so big and so global that the trading, the J.P. Morgans of the world have such far reach now that they can facilitate and they can negotiate shipping rates because of the girth of their contracts. So they can actually do what you were just suggesting, and that is either slow it down or speed it up. But what now comes to light, and what has been coming to light for a while, is the financiers, if you will, and the investment bankers have come to the point where their indifference to either being caught or being exposed is so high that they're almost in this place of, I don't care if anybody catches me, because they can't do anything about it.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I think because of the nature of what happened in 2008 and 2009 with the bailout, they have, I mean, it's obvious, they have this attitude that they're untouchable, right? Because they know that the government is going to bail them out, so they can do whatever they want. Nobody ever ends up getting prosecuted or going to jail. Okay, they get, you know, some of these financial companies get a fine of, who was it recently that just got paid their fine for being accused of manipulating, I think it was LIBOR recently. Was it ABN AMRO, or I forget which company, but they
actually,
pay their
fine. Actually, at this
point,
they've all been fined something, yeah.
Yeah, they pay their fine, $100 million or whatever, and for them, that's peanuts. I mean, these are companies that are making billions of dollars a year. But one interesting thing, I'm just looking at the volume and the open interest for the crude oil prices, or the crude oil contracts. The the volume for the Brent crude on the NYMEX, the futures, is 715,000. But the West Texas volume is like 9,600. There's a huge discrepancy in the volume.
My goodness.
That's the futures. Yeah. Yeah, there's a huge discrepancy in the volume being traded in those two contracts. And I remember before, I mean, the Brent crude contracts were much more popular, and people traded those more than the West Texas. And I don't really know why, but...
They go where the money is, Bosco. They go where the money is.
I want to chat
a little about a couple more economic things of great concern, and that is Detroit, ladies and gentlemen, is about to go bankrupt, and effectively the bailout plan that was provided to New York back in the day, and the bailout plan that has been provided to various other places in order to help them out, from what we gather, or certainly what the news is telling us right now, the feds have decided not to bail out Detroit, which seems a bit awkward and a bit silly, given that they've bailed out the entire world by printing their money. However, it also indicates to me, Bosco, that they may have reached a point, and this is where the bail-ins have come, they may have reached a point where bailing out municipalities looks to them to be inconsistent with them even keeping in power or something. I mean, I'm not actually sure what this is going to do, but here's what they're also going to do, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to take all of the people who've ever worked for the city of Detroit, and they're going to take all of their savings and all of their retirements and pay them 10 cents on the dollar. How safe would you feel working for a great big city like Detroit? It's the 15th or 18th largest city in all of the U.S., and having your retirement just disappear. This is what's happening in Cyprus, eh, Bosco? I mean, we're now talking, ladies and gentlemen, about the beginning of the next roll of calamity, even though Bosco and I have talked about it for a long time. The 2008 crisis that has been exposed and has been shown to be quite vile is going to pale in comparison to the next thing. I mean, there's little towns in California are going bankrupt. Stockton went bankrupt. Detroit is a massive city. Now, you put all of those people out on the streets because they don't have their retirement funds, their retirement, all of a sudden they're getting a check for $2,000 or $3,000 a month that now goes to $200. They're going to have something to say, and it's going to create great calamity. And, we also have the price of oil going through the roof. We also have transportation costs going through the roof. Yep. You know, again, we get into this manipulation where they may be getting to the point, Bosco, where they're cutting off the nose to spite their face. The traders are so greedy that they're trading themselves into a corner. And it's at some point in time, greed and selfishness and profiteering has got to come back and bite them in the hindquarters.
Well, I mean, the trading aspect of all this, you know, people have to understand these traders have no loyalty or commitment to anyone. They're out to make a buck. They're out to win the bet. You know, this is the mentality of a lot of these traders. They, you know, these are people that are making, you know, $500,000 a day in some cases. And they, you know, they read the markets, they read what's going on, and they design a strategy or whatever to benefit the most off of what's happening. Whether or not it's good for a city or a country, in most cases, is irrelevant to them. I'm just reading here, Detroit, they filed for bankruptcy protection. They apparently have $18.5 billion in debt. Okay, this is the for the unions, I guess for the city and the workers' unions. I'm just reading quickly here. They have claims of bankruptcy filing. The pension funds have claims of $19.2 billion in unfunded pension and retiree health care liabilities. So the pensions of I guess, the Detroit, the city workers, the police, the fire department, the city workers that work on the roads and the power company, and that I imagine that includes the teachers and so on, they're unfunded by $19.2 billion. That's huge. And that's just going to create, folks, I mean, this is coming from a city that used to be considered, and I don't know if it still is, considered the automotive capital of America. It used to be, I guess, 30 years ago or so, it was, no, maybe more than 30, probably about 40 years ago, it was the music power of America as well, with all the jazz and blues, and I mean, a lot of recording studios were in Detroit.
Good old Motown, yeah.
Yeah, Motown, and in the 1950s and 60s, Detroit was the place to be if you're in the music industry. And now, it's just a disaster. And I mean, I go there probably on a weekly basis. I have a lot of friends that work over there, and you go there now, and it's like downtown Detroit is. It's almost like a ghost town at night.
Ghost town, yeah.
There's not much action. Yeah. It's not like it used to be. I mean, you have the head, the General Motors, which is, you know, one of the biggest corporations in the world, is headquartered right downtown Detroit at the Renaissance Center. And, you know, when something like this comes out, unfortunately, I think that there's going to be a lot of social unrest over there. And it won't be the first time.
And how could there not be, eh, Bosco?
Yeah.
So when you wander through this, when you wander through the evolution of allowing a massive city like Detroit going bankrupt, what has happened is perhaps they've triggered the recognition that the economy in and of itself is starting to collapse. Now, that being said, we go and look at consumer indexes, consumer confidence indexes. We also, there's been a study out on business confidence indexes, and these things are the lowest they've been in recorded history relative to our contemporary economy. So I think what is starting to happen is the other shoe is about to drop, and the other shoe dropping is horrific. You're going to have a U.S. To put Detroit's unfunded liabilities, which are its retirement funds, to put it in perspective, the U.S., ladies and gentlemen, has about $4 trillion worth of debt. It generates about $2.5 trillion worth of revenue every year to pay it. So it falls behind between $1 and $1.5 trillion. It has the U.S. has between $120 and $200 trillion worth of unfunded liability.
Yeah.
So now you start to see what's happening in terms of this stuff, right? And so they're playing a game. They're playing a game that has they're playing a game of chicken, effectively. Hey, Bosco, they're driving towards a brick wall at a breakneck pace, and now they're starting to say, well, let's just go steal people's money because the wheels are starting to fall off this car. So we'll go steal some wheels to put it back in the car. Those are called bail-ins. Mm-hmm. The stories, ladies and gentlemen, on the Internet on Cyprus right now are absolutely horrific, because I think what's happening to their economy is everybody's just leaving. Businesses are shutting down. The only guys that are making any money now are the lawyers suing people for not getting enough money or for giving them their money back, right? So, you know, the old lawyer jokes are going to start to float around, eh, Bosco?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, this is dire.
This is a wake-up call.
Oh, yeah. This is a big wake-up call for people out there. I mean, this is evidence that you can't depend on someone else to provide you with a pension or retirement or you know, even deposits in the bank. I mean, folks, this isn't, you know, I know a lot of our listeners take the information that we discussed seriously, whether or not they're taking action to protect themselves from things like this. But folks, you don't want to get stuck, you know, a year from now when you wake up one morning and the bank or the government issues new rules on retirement funds or whatever, They're not going to give you, you know, you have 3 months to do this, this, and this. It's going to be something that's announced overnight. And you know for a fact that the government doesn't have a track record of giving you notice ahead of something. For example, in Nixon's famous speech in 1971, on a Sunday evening, announces that the U.S. dollar is no longer backed by gold and they're closing the gold window. I mean, this was something that's a huge announcement. And, you know, these are just warning signs right now, folks. You have to take action to be, as Jeff always says, self-reliant. And, you know, get your money out of, if you have, depending on the situation, you know, get your money out of the banks. If you have $100,000 or more, put it in different assets or take cash out or take paper certificates in treasuries, if that's possible, buy gold and silver, buy land. But having deposits in the bank, if it's over $100,000, is not a good idea now.
Well, we'll put it in perspective in terms of there's an adage that is certainly taught in business school, and I've taught it in business school for many years, and that is risk is commensurate with return. And so if, in fact, you think the banks are safe, which almost nobody in sound mind would, the returns that the banks are giving you, which are tenths of a percentage, would be mean that money in the bank is safe, and they aren't. I mean, the Cypriot banks were all just effectively ransacked. The banks should be paying interest of 20 or 30 or 40 or 50% relative to where we see them going. Now, I wanted to bring up another old adage, which is a simple one, Bosco, but it's very important. And there are people who make things happen. These are the people who are self-reliant. These are people who look at the writing on the wall and actually take action. Mm-hmm. There are people who watch what is happening and and grumble and comment and discuss it. And then there are people who say, what happened?
Wonder
Let's
what happened,
trust yeah. that that we become conduits to facilitating people taking action, taking more rigorous action. Now,
you got to take action, folks. Jeff, I just wanted to cut in here and quickly mention, you know, with all this, like what we discussed about Detroit and with what's going on in the economy, we have the Fed chairman came out, I believe yesterday, these are his words. He says that he doesn't understand gold prices, okay? He said, well, first he said nobody understands gold prices, and he doesn't make out like he does either. And then he says that the gold is not a good indicator of inflation. Well, folks, I mean, you see what's going on in the economy, in the financial situation, in the city of Detroit, and he says that gold, he questions, you know, if gold is some kind of barometer of, you know, to protect yourself against risk in the economy and so on, and he's saying that it's not a valid indicator. Well, I don't know how, Jeff, I don't understand how this guy has any credibility, really. I don't. Because over the past 10 years, everyone knows, okay, the price of food and energy, gasoline, your price of groceries has gone up, you know, 2-3 times. Okay, the price of a liter of gas here in Windsor was, 12 years ago, maybe 45 cents. Now it's $1.35, I think, this morning, a liter. Okay, a loaf of bread was maybe 75 cents. Now it's $2.25. I don't know where this guy lives, but it's not on the same planet. Seriously. I mean, how can anybody take what he says seriously anymore? And then when he was questioned by Ron Paul last year, why does the Federal Reserve hold gold? He says, oh, it's just because tradition. What do you mean tradition? I mean, practically every central bank around the world has gold in reserve, and he doesn't understand why? Well, why is he even in that position? It makes no sense. So either it's not that he's not intelligent. He's obviously very intelligent, But I just think this is all just a show. It
yeah.
really is. This is the Alice in Wonderland economy.
Well, and it behooves us all to question his intentions behind why he's saying this. It behooves us all to question his intentions behind
yeah.
why he's saying it. Because, as Bosco has just pointed out quite lucidly, the intention I might interpret to this is he wants to mitigate the trading decline in gold price so that they can acquire more gold, if in fact that's what he's doing, or that the traders that are the puppet masters behind him can acquire
yeah.
more gold.
Yeah.
Right? Just as we said in previous shows, there's a big difference between the gold price and the price of gold.
Yeah.
And one of the things that does happen in these dire times is that the traders facilitate activities to protect themselves, which is what we want you to do, to protect
mm-hmm.
yourself in terms of having gold and silver and these commodities. So
yeah.
that when the manipulator's game gets called, when the car hits the wall, you are protected. You have secured and you have protected your wealth rather than see it fritter away. Because
yeah,
there will be a point in time. There will be a point in time where currencies will have to be backed by gold. And I'm not sure if it's in a day, a month, or a year, but it's coming.
Well, Jeff, on Wednesday in Russian news, China reportedly planning to back the yuan with gold.
Oh,
okay.
My
We have
goodness.
China now. Here, let me just read you the first couple sentences here. Recent media reports suggest that Beijing is considering backing the yuan with gold. This decision, if taken, will likely affect China's economy and may trigger a new wave of global economic crisis. For Russia, however, such a scenario may have its benefits. And the article goes on, and they're kind of criticizing China for, they say that it would not be good for the global economy and so on, and the U.S. in particular, if they were to back their currency with gold. Well, I think that this is another piece of propaganda, tell you the truth, because I think if China backs their currency with gold, they're going to have stability. And, you know, even the price of gold now, folks, is quoted in U.S. dollars around the world. China right now, their currency is pegged to the U.S. dollar. So if they peg their dollar to gold, this is a complete reversal, okay? They're saying to the rest of the world that they really couldn't care less about the U.S. dollar. They see that the U.S. Policies, economic policies, are not good for them. And why do you think all the Chinese citizens, why they're promoting gold to their citizens? They don't. Even if they back their currency in one perspective is already backed by gold because, for one, a lot of their citizens are buying gold, and they don't let any gold out of the country, and all the production of gold from their miners stay in the country. So they're loading up their country with gold. So if they back their currency with gold, I think it would just be a normal next step. It's a logical step if they want to, you know, raise their profile in the global scene, which they've already done for the past 10 years. I think China's, you know, one of the best performing economies in the past 10 years. And, I mean, if they go to a gold-backed currency, that's going to put even more pressure on the U.S.
Well, let's harken back to our time in Toronto together, Bosco, and we'll chat a little about Currency Wars in the book that's written by James Rickard. And he talks about when they got together to figure out how they could declare war, they were tasked with the job of doing it without any guns and bullets and bombs. The way that they got together to play this game was to do it financially. And one of the things that he in fact did, because he was part of these war games, is he declared war in a financial manner. And one of the warning bells in the war was, we're going to back our currency with gold. Now, putting that in perspective, Bosco, if in fact China does this, it will collapse the U.S. dollar. And the Chinese, there was this thought, certainly a thought by some of us noodling on this, that if they do in fact back their currency by gold, what they're doing is they're writing off the debt that the Americans are trying to pay back with their monopoly money. Yep. However, if the Chinese aren't stupid, ladies and gentlemen, are they doing this because they know the U.S. dollar is going to be valueless very soon? I don't know. Is this a nail in its coffin? I don't know. Is this food for thought? Abso-flippin-lutely.
Oh, yeah.
So we start to see a whole bunch, and maybe if the Americans get wind of this, maybe when the Americans get wind of this, the Americans themselves are going to be buying gold like mad. If they aren't, we have seen a mass exodus of gold out of the COMEX. The inventories of gold has been dramatically reduced, and the amount of gold that is being purchased right now through Hong Kong and Shanghai is absolutely enormous, to the tune of $750 million, 750 tons.
That could be.
Anyways, I mean, that number may be incorrect, Bosco, and I apologize for that. But there's a mass exodus of gold into Asia.
Well, yeah, I mean, the physical market is. See, folks, and there's a lot of news now in the gold circles on the blogosphere, I guess, if you will, regarding the lease rates of gold and how central banks are tied into that and bullion banks and so on and how all the gold was taken out of the ETFs. And there's a number of analysts that are looking at this issue. And basically what happens, folks, is you know, and you'll get this response from every banker, financial planner, whatever, that gold is not a good investment because it doesn't produce interest or dividends, which is completely wrong. First of all, gold is not supposed to because it's money. But even if it is money, okay, money produces in a sense, you know, savings. If you have money in the bank, it'll produce interest in a savings account, right? Which is right now minimal, useless. It's probably negative, but gold does produce interest, and here's how. Okay, when a bullion bank wants to sell gold, they'll lease gold from a central bank, the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve will lease their gold out to a bullion bank, let's say J.P. Morgan, for example, okay? And J.P. Morgan pays them for the gold. And what do you think happens to the gold when J.P. Morgan has it? Well, they sell it to their clients, okay, who take physical possession. The problem, folks, is that the central bank, on their balance sheet, they don't count that as gold sold. They called it leased, and they still count it on their balance sheet as they still have possession of it. But where is the physical gold? Well, if J.P. Morgan's customer was a bank in China or a client in China, an individual, that gold is in China now. The physical gold is gone. It's not coming back, but the Federal Reserve doesn't take it off their balance sheet. They keep it on their balance sheet, and they still say that they have, whatever, 8,000 tons of gold at Fort Knox, which is questionable.
Yeah.
I mean, people have been questioning this for years. And, you know, but, you know, has there ever been an official audit, a real audit? No. I mean, since 1950, I guess, 55 or something like that. But, you know, sometimes they'll take somebody down there and show them, yeah, here's the gold, but you can't really go inside the vault and touch anything. Well, I mean, that's not an audit. You have to go in and weigh each bar.
We have some property in Florida for those kind of people, don't we, Bosco?
Well, yeah, really. So, I mean, I think that this...
Well, and we also...
Where else
what Bosco's also
China,
pointed out...
Bosco's
also
China,
pointed out accounting stuff, right?
Yeah.
Bosco's been pointing out accounting discrepancies and accounting methodologies which only facilitate those people who want to report... nonsense. So the accounting guys get together and they say, well, you can lease it and own it at the same time. What the heck? And we'll let you. So with what Bosco's just described is you can have it, not have it at the same time, and put it on your books like you have it. Like, how delusory is that?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know,
nonsense.
They can get away with anything. But, I mean, the fact that China is considering, and again, I mean, the source of these articles and, you know, a lot of people question what really goes on in China because they're not really transparent economy. You know, whether or not this is true, who knows? But it does make sense to me. And I mean, I think that there is a lot of evidence that gold is very popular in China. People are investing in it. You know, and I see it from the industry that there's a lot of action going on in Asia regarding gold. And you know, folks, you have to, the argument in the U.S., Jeff, a lot of people say that, oh, China can't do that because, you know, the U.S. is their biggest customer, and, you know, you can't, what would they do if the U.S. economy goes down? Who would buy their products? Folks, the Chinese have over 1 billion people. If their people start to get more prosperous, they're going to buy their own goods, okay? And actually, I think Europe is actually their number one customer right now.
Yeah, Europe is more important to China than the U.S. is in terms of its economic impact. And consequently, the Chinese agenda would be to be far less derogatory to the European economy than it would be to the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, one of the things that the Americans have done, to which the Chinese took great exception, is the Americans are printing their way out of debt. And in all fairness, Bosco, I would print my way out of debt if I could. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly it doesn't go very well in the end. Certainly, there's the Weimar Republic. We were witness to that in Germany. But mm-hmm. Why would you not do something if you could get away with it? And here comes back to the old context of self-reliance, but also of being able to read between the lines of what's being told you. The Americans mm-hmm. and the American government and the U.S. Federal Reserve System does not have your interests in their mind. They don't care. What they will do is destroy the economy to secure their own well-being. So all of these guys, and believe me, there aren't very, very many of them, they will throw anybody they need to under the bus in order to facilitate what their plans are.
Yeah.
Now, the trick is not letting anybody know what their plans are when we have the capacity to talk about it, to talk out about it, to review the internet, to actually blog on this very topic. And so, they give you the impression that they care about your best interests. I think it's probably time that you realize that just isn't the truth. And there's some dire consequences. They're actually throwing Detroit under the bus, which is the beginning. It's the beginning of something that isn't going to be much fun. And it's not just, it won't be just Detroit. There will be other cities in America that will happen too. I mean, and countries. We're seeing Cyprus right now has been devastated by the banks testing out a methodology of saving it.
Yeah,
this gives us great, great concern.
Yeah, there's a lot of, when I listened to Bernanke's speech earlier today, you can't believe that this guy, some of the comments he made with a straight face, it's just unbelievable. I mean, you know, he's saying that he actually said that the price of gold going down is a sign that the global geopolitics and the economies are getting better and stuff. I mean,
yeah. Oh, as Detroit's going bankrupt.
Jeff, I don't think this guy lives in the real world. I don't know.
He's being given a script. The other thing that's happening is Bernanke's not coming back, so his term ends shortly.
Yeah,
he may very well be being given a script saying, "I don't care. I'm getting out of here. I'm going to buy my gold and silver and go hide out in the mountains." Right?
I'd love to find out if he actually owns any gold bullion himself. But I mean, regardless, folks, there is so much news and information out there now that you never really know who to listen to or what to believe. But I think the simplest thing that you have to take seriously is self-reliance. Make sure that you have your house in order, pay off all your debt, get some gold and silver, do what you have to do to not depend on other people for your income or retirement or your to maintain your standard of living and so on, because I mean, it's going to be, I'm right next door to Detroit here, and Hopefully I'll be able to keep everyone up to date on what's going on over there. When a big city like this goes bankrupt, especially when it's a border city, I don't know if the statistics are true year to date, but a few years ago, I know that the amount of trade between Canada and the U.S., okay, 25% of all the trading between the two countries went through Detroit and Windsor.
Holy smokes.
That's a huge amount.
That is huge.
Especially the automotive industry. Here, the bridge and the tunnel, it was packed. I remember when during 9/11, the trucks were backed up for miles and miles. They couldn't get across the border. Probably you could drive for almost an hour, and the trucks were backed up on the highway all the way down the 401. They couldn't get through. So, this is, a significant issue, and, hopefully they can work something out. If they gave all the financial institutions a bailout, they should, take care of their own their own cities. So the federal government, I don't know what they're going to do, but it looks like...
Well, I tell you, we have shown and talked about the signposts of this, and we know that 2008 was a big collapse, and there's all kinds of lovely write-ups on it and lovely movies on it on how disastrous it was and how greed led us here. I think 2008 was the first step, and I think the next shoe is in the throes of falling, the throes of dropping. And I think when they start to throw cities under buses as opposed to little towns, there's something going on, right? It will get to a point, we think, ladies and gentlemen, where the powers that be financially are will have no control over what happens, and that's when we think the price of gold and silver will go through the roof, and that's when we think countries like China will start to back a currency by gold. That's when we start to think the U.S. reserve, the currency that now holds the world reserve currency, will disappear because nobody trusts the Americans economically anymore. I mean, the U.S. economy is sliding, Bosco. Everybody knows it. The press is telling us that it isn't because they don't want full-scale panic, right? Yeah, especially Bernanke, yeah. And the powers that be are lying to our faces, not like they haven't ever, always. And there's some stuff in here that just it bodes poorly for the future. And I think there is no better time right now to be buying gold because they've manipulated the price down so they can buy more of it and as well use their manipulations to acquire it.
It's really sad, to tell you the truth. I mean, from such a great countries. A lot of people say that during the 50s, the U.S. was, the most powerful and the best country to live in. My father grew up in the 50s, and, he said it was great. He's always working. And, there's that, impression of, one man can work and raise a family and pay for the house on one salary, but you'll rarely find anyone able to do that now. It's usually both husband and wife are working, and they still can't. They're
making
ends
meet. They're
living month to month and so on, and they got a mountain of debt to deal with, and so it's a sad situation. And I hope somebody comes up with some good ideas to turn things around, but folks, I wouldn't wait for that to happen. I would take measures and do what you need to do to be self-reliant. And if you have any questions, you could give us a call at 800-649-6722. We could help you out with the gold and silver part of the becoming self-reliant. If you have any economic questions or anything of that nature, you could send an email over to Jeff. Jeff, you want to give out your email there?
Email is viadao, V-I-A-T-A-O, @gmail.com.
Okay.
And it looks like we've run out of time here yet again, Bosco.
Yeah, we're out of time here, folks. So You know, we wish everyone a good weekend, and we look forward to speaking with all of you next week. And if anyone has any questions, send us an email, and we'll address it next week. Jeff, likewise, have a good weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, and thank you for allowing us to be of service, ladies and gentlemen. Goodbye. Talk to you soon.
Goodbye.